Today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text 30. Prahlad, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Shri Prahlada Vacha.
My dear
Nakrishne
Paratasvatova.
Mito vipadyeta grihavratanam.
Mito vipadyeta grihavratanam.
Aranta gobhir vishatam tamisram.
Aranta gobhir vishatam tamisram.
Puna punaschar vita charvananam.
Puna punaschar vita charvananam.
Shri Prahlada Uvacha.
Matirna
Krishne
Paratasvatova.
Mito vipadyeta grihavratanam.
Mito vipadyeta grihavratanam.
Aranta gobhir vishatam tamisram.
Aranta gobhir vishatam tamisram.
Puna punaschar vita charvananam.
Puna punaschar vita charvananam.
Please chant.
Shri Prahlada Uvacha.
Matirna Krishna Parata Svatova. Adanta Gobi Vishatam Tamisam. Puna Punashtarita Charvanana.
Shri Prahlada Uvacha.
Shri Prahlada Uvacha. Matirna Krishna Parata Svatova.
Mito
vidyate grihavritanam.
Aranta
gobhir vishatam tamisram.
Puna
punaschar vita charvananam. Jai. Would someone like to read the translation? Or we'll do the word for word. Sorry, my bad. Shri Prahlada Uvacha.
Prahlada
Maharaj said.
Mati.
Inclination.
Na.
Nah.
Never.
Krishne.
Unto Lord Krishna.
Parata.
From the instructions of
others. Svata.
From their own understanding.
Va.
Either.
Mita.
From combined effort.
Abhipadyeta.
Is developed.
Grihavratanam.
Of persons too addicted to the materialistic bodily conception of life.
Adanta.
Uncontrolled.
Gobi.
By the senses.
Vishatam.
Entering.
Tamisram.
Hellish life.
Puna.
Again.
Puna.
Again.
Charvita.
Things already chewed.
Charvananam.
Who are chewing.
Okay, would someone like to read the translation? Or should we usually read it together? How do we do it? Oh, let's read it together. Okay. Prahlada Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed.
Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. So, this is a really nice verse. Hold on. So I remember, before we read the purport, I just wanted to give a little thing about, a realization about this verse. Last year when I was in Mayapur Dham, it was so ecstatic. There's just like, everyone's always smiling. Everyone's filled with so much joy in Mayapur because as soon as you get there, all of your like distresses are just instantly relieved. They're just like that as soon as you enter into the Dham. Our holy place, and there's thousands of people coming every day, chanting and smiling and dancing together. And I remember just looking over the temple room, just in so much awe, feeling so much ecstasy of Krishna consciousness because of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and because of the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And I was just thinking, what's wrong with the world? Why isn't everyone doing this? I mean, I just was like, I don't get it. Everyone's suffering so miserably. Why doesn't the entire world just come together and chant Hare Krishna? And it was just driving me nuts. I was like, because I was feeling so enlivened by this. And every day it was getting, I was going deeper and deeper into feeling so much ecstasy. And at the same time, going into much more anxiety over like, why doesn't everyone just do this? It's so easy. People are just not wanting to be happy or something. And Bhakti Charamaraj was giving a really nice seminar. And he was talking about, part of his seminar, he was talking about how there's three different types of people in this world. There's people that have demoniac tendencies. There's people that have divine tendencies. And then there's also innocent people. And he said most people in this world are just innocent. And that's why we can take to Krishna consciousness, because if we're maybe not devotees like myself, and I was reflecting, I was just an innocent bystander that happened to meet a pure devotee. And now here I am chanting Hare Krishna. How did I get so lucky to have received all this? And so I was asking Bhakti Charamaraj, like, I don't get it. How come most people are innocent, but how come I'm here in Mayapur and I'm so ecstatic being here serving Krishna? I don't deserve to serve Krishna. And he said, and I was so frustrated, like, there's so many people out there that have heard from pure devotees. And there's so many people that met Srila Prabhupada but didn't take up the process. And I just didn't get it. I'm like, why don't more people do this? It's so wonderful. And Bhakti Charamaraj simply said, they're just not innocent enough. But still I was like, but why not? Like, why isn't that, what does it mean to be innocent? Like, what does it really mean to be innocent enough to actually receive the mercy of Lord Chaitanya? Because maybe some of you here are great devotees from past lives, but I know I'm just here because I received the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and my spiritual master in Srila Prabhupada, just because I was an innocent bystander. But so I was wondering, what does it mean to actually be innocent enough to receive the Lord's mercy and to take up this process? And so when I read this verse, I was like, aha, that's it. And Prahlad Maharaj says, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew what has already been chewed. Their inclinations towards Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or a combination of both. So here this verse clearly explains that even if they do receive the instructions of a pure devotee, if someone's just engrossed in thinking that they're going to find happiness in this material world, then they can't appreciate the actual happiness that's found in Krishna consciousness. And so it's said many times, and I've heard many times how it's very important that we are
materially exhausted that if one thinks that they can still find happiness in this material world, then they can't go back to Godhead because they're still in the illusion that there's some happiness to be found in the material world. So we'll discuss that today, this concept of chewing what has already been chewed. So if we can go around and read the purport.
In this verse, the words Matirna Krishna refer to devotional service rendered to Krishna. So-called politicians, erudite scholars and philosophers who read Bhagavad Gita try to twist some meaning from it to suit their material purposes, but their misunderstanding of Krishna will not yield them any profit. Because such politicians, philosophers and scholars are interested in using Bhagavad Gita as a vehicle for adjusting things materially, for them, constant thought of Krishna or Krishna consciousness is impossible, Matirna Krishna. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vaktya Mam Avijananti, only through devotional service can one understand Krishna as he is. The so-called politicians and scholars think of Krishna as fictitious. The politician says that his Krishna is different from the Krishna depicted in Bhagavad Gita, even though he accepts Krishna and Rama as the supreme. He thinks of Rama and Krishna as impersonal because he has no idea of service to Krishna. Thus, his only business is puna punas charvita charvananam, chewing the chivet again and again. The aim of such politicians and academic scholars is to enjoy this material world with their bodily senses. Therefore, it is clearly stated here that those who are grihavrata, whose only aim is to live comfortably with the body in the material world, cannot understand Krishna. The two expressions, griha vrata and charvita charvananam, indicate that a materialistic person tries to enjoy sense gratification in different bodily forms, life after life, but is still unsatisfied. In the name of personalism, this ism or that ism, such persons always remain attached to the materialistic way of life. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhogasharya Parakshatanam, Taya parita chetasham vyavashaya mika buddhi sambodhuna vidityate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord doesn't take place.
Those who are attached to material enjoyment cannot be fixed in devotional service to the Lord. They cannot understand Bhagavan, Krishna, or his instruction, Bhagavad Gita. Ananta bhir gopir vishvatam tamishwaram. Their path actually leads towards hellish life. As confirmed by Rishabhdev, Mahat Sevan Dwaram Ahur Vimuktehe. One must try to understand Krishna by serving a devotee. The word Mahat refers to a devotee. Mahatmastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashritaha bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, and under the protection of the divine nature, they are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. A Mahatma is one who is constantly engaged in devotional service, 24 hours a day. As explained in the following verses, unless one adheres to such a great personality, one cannot understand Krishna. Hiranyakashipu wanted to know where Prahlad had gotten this Krishna consciousness. Who had taught him? Prahlad sarcastically replied, "My dear father, persons like you never understand Krishna. One can understand Krishna only by serving a Mahat, a great soul. Those who try to adjust material conditions are said to be chewing the chewed. No one has been able to adjust material conditions, but life after life, generation after generation, people try and repeatedly fail. Unless one is properly trained by a Mahata, a Mahatma, or an alloyed devotee of the Lord, there is no possibility of one's understanding Krishna and his devotional service."
Thank you for your ecstatic reading. I did not fall asleep. Yeah, you can read every verse. Om Akyanti Mirandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Okay, so this verse describes those people who are not inclined to Krishna consciousness because they're engrossed in materialism and they're just chewing what's already been chewed. But the Bhagavad Gita explains four types of people who are interested in Krishna consciousness. Can anyone say what one of them is? Shruti?
Distressed.
Inquisitive.
One in knowledge.
One who's desiring the absolute truth of knowledge. Huh? He's already said inquisitive. Someone that's looking for material profit. So those are the four types of people they approach in the beginning. These are not the pure devotees, but people approach God for different reasons. They want, you know, they're inquisitive, it's God, or they might be looking for something in return from God, materially speaking, or some sort of mystic power, etc. So there's many different reasons, but this verse is explaining why people don't approach God. This verse explains very clearly why some people hear from pure devotees, but unfortunately their hearts don't change. Part of the problem is that we still think that there's going to be some happiness to be found in this material world. But why is that? Why do we still think? I mean, we've been kicked around a lot in this lifetime and in so many other lifetimes. We've been, kicked around a lot, smashed on our faces, so many things. We get back up and we're like, oh, it's not that bad, you know, I'll just keep going. I'm going to find some happiness here. That didn't work, so let me try this, you know. And it's like the happiness of the material existence, it's like if it didn't work this time, let's throw some glitter on it and maybe spray it with some scented stuff, scented rose water, or some fake artificial scented perfume, and then it'll satisfy us. Oh, okay, that didn't work. Oh, let's wrap it in plastic and change its name. Oh, okay, no, that still didn't satisfy me. Let's try it this way. And there's one analogy that I thought of, talking about chewing the chewed. What does it mean to chew the chewed? It's like you go to the grocery store or wherever, CVS, in uncountable different types of chewing gum, right? Because one isn't going to satisfy you. So maybe a little kid, an innocent little kid, will think, oh, okay, mommy, give me some chewing gum. This will make me happy, right? This chewing gum will really make me happy. So they chew it. And after some time, it loses its flavor and it starts to get kind of nasty, you know. And then you spit it out, and you're like, but I'll be happy maybe if I try this other kind of chewing gum. So this one's got flavor bursts in it, you know? Maybe the flavor bursts will make me happy. No, it also loses its taste, and after a while you spit it out. And then you might go through and try every single different kind of chewing gum. Watermelon flavored, sour flavored, bright blue, hot pink, whatever. Different types of chewing gum. They all lose their taste and eventually you spit them out. And still, this longing for some happiness is there. So you think, oh, maybe chewing gum wasn't it. Maybe it's chocolate. And so goes the chewing the chewed. And that's the happiness that we're looking for in this material world. We always think, this didn't work, but maybe if I try it, maybe I just didn't do it right. Maybe if I just try to find happiness in temporary enjoyment, this way it won't be temporary and it'll actually make me fulfilled. So that's one example. Can any of you think of other examples of how material enjoyment is like chewing the chew, Johnny Tai?
Prabhupada gives an example of the sugar cane. Mm. How when someone is chewing the sugar cane, after a while it loses its flavor, but they still chew on it. They'll still be chewing it, even though there's no more flavor left in it at all. They're still just chewing away on the same old piece. Really dry at that point and no flavor at all.
Yeah. But we just keep doing it because we still think there's some happiness to be found here. So I thought of a lot of different examples of chewing that chewed in this material world. And the reason we'll discuss it is so that when we go out, because that's part of the reason we're still here, is because we really honestly think there's still going to be some happiness found in this material world. And I know I'm definitely included in that. And so if you can take one thing from this class, it's when you go out in the world and you see that there's something that catches your senses and makes you, even at your mind, they might think, oh yeah, that might be nice, you know? Then you just catch yourself and be like, wait a minute, this is chewing the chewed. Like, is that really going to give me the happiness that my heart is longing for? And so try to just reflect. So a few different things here that I thought of just on meditating. Politics. The election coming up, it's like a huge deal right now. Not maybe for us, we don't even discuss it at all, barely as devotees. But that's also chewing the chewed, thinking, oh, well, this next president, he's gonna solve the problems. He's gonna be the one to change the world. And that's what all the advertising says. It makes people think, oh, this next one, maybe none of the other presidents could do it, but this next one's going to do it. No, because they all have ulterior motives. They're not, they might have some desire to actually help people, but it's mixed with selfish desires for profit, adoration, distinction. And so until, you know, in Kali Yuga, the likelihood of us having a devotional president that actually wants to spread God consciousness is minimum, so we should just tolerate and keep going, but not get all wrapped up in it, because it's just chewing the chewed. The news. My mother sometimes asks me, don't you ever watch the news? Don't you know what's going on in the world? And I try to politely explain, yeah, it's isn't it the same stuff over and over again? There's wars, there's starvation, there's people raping and killing each other. And actually there's a study, I think it was done by Harvard or Stanford, explaining how there's a direct correlation between how much one watches the news and how actually depressed they are. And because it's all these horrible things going on in the world, and I'm like, it's not that I don't care, it's just that, I mean, I do really care about the horrible things going on in the world, but there's not a whole lot that I can do except for what I'm doing right now, which is what I feel like is the best thing that anyone could possibly do, which is, that's a whole nother story, but we won't get into that. So even the news, it's all chewing the chewed. It's the same thing over and over and over again. And it's very depressing. TV shows and radio songs, it's the same. Oh, baby, you're so wonderful. And then, oh, baby, I can't believe you left me. It's the same thing over and over again. Just different tunes, different lyrics, same lyrics. same thing on the television shows. This person cheated on me. That person, you know, I'm going to cheat this person so that I can get happiness. It's the same thing. And, of course, I saw when I was away on the news, the iPod 5 is coming out, or the iPad 5, iPhone something, I don't know. You know, and if the first four weren't good enough, you know, this next one is, I promise, I guarantee you, it will satisfy all your desires. Not that you can't use these things in Krishna's service. You can use these things in Krishna's service. But we're speaking from a platform of thinking that this material thing in itself is going to give you happiness. But a devotee sees all things in relationship with how they can use it in Krishna's service. So go get yourselves your iPad 5 if you really have to. You know, you can use it in Krishna's service. So even worshiping the demigods oftentimes is chewing the chewed, because it's asking for material benedictions in return. And oftentimes people, not just the demigods, even Krishna, people will approach for material things because they haven't been given the intelligence to understand that these things are temporary and they're not going to make me happy. But all of you are so intelligent. You know those things aren't going to make you happy. So you know not to approach Krishna for them. Or the demigods for them. One thing actually I observed in India, like when you go to the store, sometimes even I get distracted, you know, if I have to get some toothpaste, I'm like, oh my God, there's so many different kinds. What kind am I gonna, well, there's like too many kinds, you know, to choose from. But in India, you go to the store, there's only like three kinds. It's like, oh, okay, no problem, just get this one. It's like, but I remember like me and Amrita Kaylee sometimes would go shopping and she'd be like, wait, I can't decide which kind of deodorant. Just get one. Because it's all chewing the chew. There's too many different varieties. Because that's the material world's glittering, illusory shakti to make us get distracted by so many different types of material sense enjoyment. But it's all the same thing, really. It's all thinking that we're going to find happiness here. Hold on, let me catch up with where I am. And also, it's very common in relationships. We think, oh, this person, when we first get involved with someone, maybe, we think, oh, wow, they're so wonderful. They have all the good qualities, and they're so great because of this and this and this. And then some months or years later, you're like, oh, man, they didn't satisfy all of my desires. They weren't what I was looking for. So maybe that person will be the fulfillment of all of my desires. And so that is why the divorce rate is so high, because people aren't willing to just tolerate and serve each other. They're looking at how is this person going to serve my emotional, financial, physical needs. So that's also chewing the chew. And that's probably the most prominent form of chewing the chew that we find in the material world, is the attraction between the opposite sex. And thinking we'll find our ultimate gratification in that. Do I have time for this? No. Anyways. And even Prabhupada explains in the purport how isms are chewing the chewed, different groups that we try to be a part of, communism, socialism, Judaism, you know, anarchism, whatever it is. We think that if we just serve this group, then we'll be happy. But Krishna very clearly says that it's only by watering the root of a tree that the whole tree can become satisfied. Not just, oh, my branch is better than your branch, you know. My twig, this nation, this country, this group, this organization is better than yours. But that's not watering the root of the tree. And the only way we can become satisfied is by watering the root of the tree. Anyways, we won't go into that analogy too much. But I forget, someone can help me out with this one, but it said somewhere that insanity or means that to, what is it?
Doing the same thing again and again,
expecting a different result. So people might say, oh, but it's not the same thing, it's different. But if you really reflect on it, it's really the same thing. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, you can feel it in the air. Same with Indian holidays. But for devotee holidays, people wake up, even though they didn't get any sleep the day before, and they're busy dancing and running around serving Krishna, you wake up the next morning like, man, that was great! Let's do it again! Well, careful. Don't worry, there's ice cream and cake for Srimati Radharani on Saturday night. And, So there's a really nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Yehi samsparsha jabo ga dukha yonaya evate ariyantavanta konteya na te shiramate buddha. Krishna explains how an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, ariyantavanta. And so a wise person does not even delight in them. So we should work together and try to support each other and try to become these wise, intelligent people where we can look at the world and realize, oh, these pleasures, so-called pleasures, are actually sources of misery. Because the desires of the material nature, of the material world, there's suffering in the beginning, the middle, and the end. If we're longing, if we're hankering after something, whatever it is, we're in anxiety, and we're suffering because of that, because we're wanting it so bad, and we don't have it, and I really want it. You just picture a little kid going, "Mommy, Mommy, give me that." And but then maybe once you get it, it might be fun for some time, you know, a toy, or whether your toy is a car this big or a big, tell me the name of a big fancy car. A Mercedes-Benz, that might be your toy. But then once you have it, whatever it is that you are hankering after, you're always in anxiety over how to protect it and keep it and to not lose it.
There's always the risk of a big chew grant
falling on you. Yeah, there's always, you know. And so there's anxiety even once you have obtained the thing that you've been longing for. And then, of course, there's anxiety once it's gone, because everything of the material nature will be taken away from us at the time of death, if not before then, most likely before then. And so no matter what, beginning, middle, or end, there's always suffering. So a devotee just realizes, oh, but I can serve Krishna now. And I was serving Krishna back then. Maybe if I wasn't, then I should start seriously now. And I can serve Krishna for the rest of eternity. And that's always fun. So there's always something material to worry about. No matter what, if we reflect on our lives, there's always something going on, whether huge or little. But even if it's something little, it still absorbs our mind in worrying about this thing that isn't necessarily being taken care of materially in our lives. And this happens because Krishna wants us actually to be materially frustrated so that we give up looking for happiness in the material world and look for something deeper. And that's why we're all here, because all of you have, to some extent, realized that there's not that much happiness to be found in the material world. So we're always going to be worried about something, actually, if you observe your mind. I don't know, maybe it's just me. maybe it is just me. There's always something to be worried about, whether, you know, whatever it is. But better we be worried about how to serve Krishna, how to please Krishna, how can we chant better, how can we have better sadhana, how can we do our service better, how can I serve that devotee better. And so if we transform our anxieties and our worries over how to become a nicer, more humble devotee and please Krishna better, then that's a much nicer worry. And even in those worries, it's like a peaceful worry. Even my mother observed this, this weekend. She was like, "You seem like you're always worrying about stuff, but yet you don't have the anxieties and like the intensity that other people, that she observes in herself." And she was seeing that as a good thing. So even in the spiritual world, Mother Yashoda is always worrying about Krishna. Oh, Krishna's beautiful soft lotus feet. What if he steps on a thorn or a rock or whatever? Mother Yashoda is always absorbed in worrying about Krishna. Even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so we should just, when we see ourselves worrying, just think, oh, okay, wait. These material things, Krishna will take care of them, whatever it is. And what's the sense in worrying about it? Because there's always something to worry about materially. Not that we don't take care of our material things. We take care of them. And we do it responsibly. We shouldn't just absorb our minds and always worrying about those things. Better we worry about how to serve Krishna and please Krishna. So we're always adjusting our material conditions because they're not satisfying us. It's called bhoga tyag. If we either work really hard to try to get some end, this is the mode of passion, and then we think, like, it's oftentimes Prabhupada gives the example that people work 9 to 5 like an ass, even more than 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and then the weekend comes, and they're like, ah, finally, it's time to enjoy bhoga. It's time to enjoy. But actually, all bhoga is for Krishna. And so, it's just the same cycle over and over again, and it's all a lot of suffering. But even in the material sense, things always have to, they have to change things, because the same old thing gets boring. And, running out of time. The same old things get very boring in the material sense, so, they have to change, like I said earlier, you see advertising stuff, they'll change the name for something, or they'll add something to a product that was already existing. They'll change the label to make it seem something like something new. Or they'll say whatever. We've seen it all so much in advertising. But Krishna, it's interesting to observe. Krishna, we don't have to change the holy names. They have to change so many songs about how to find happiness in the opposite sex. But even though it's about the same thing. But the holy names, we don't have to change. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And if you keep chanting sincerely, then the holy names just get deeper and the taste gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. You can change the tune, but the holy names are always beautiful. You can even sing the same tune over and over and over again. But the taste of Krishna's names just increase. Whereas in the material sense, you try to chew the same thing over and over and over again, and the taste diminishes. But it's anything related to Krishna, Krishna's names, his form. The more and more time you spend looking at a deity and serving a deity, the more beautiful that deity becomes. So much more beautiful. Sometimes it's like, you can't get any more beautiful. And you keep looking at Krishna. And he just keeps getting more beautiful. And his pastimes. How much time can we spend talking about Krishna stealing butter? How many times have you heard? Maybe some of you are new devotees. It's for those of you who've been around long enough, Chaitanya, some of us that have grown up hearing about Krishna stealing butter, it never gets old. I used to work at a summer camp, and I would tell the same story of Krishna stealing butter to a different cabin every night. I didn't tell them that he was God. I was just talking about Krishna stealing butter. And the kids were just in rapt attention. And every day they'd say, will you tell us about Krishna stealing butter again? We want to hear the same, you know, they just... You know, it's the same thing. If someone else is stealing butter, it wouldn't be that interesting. But Krishna. But Krishna. If someone else is stealing butter, it would be on the news. There would be this big, you know. And then a few days later, we'd forget about it. But Krishna stole butter 5,000 years ago, and we're still talking about it. With great enthusiasm and excitement. And so, hearing about Krishna, it's ever fresh, and anything related to Krishna is ever fresh. And even Krishna is attractive, like here Prabhupada was explaining in the purport, how even people that are politicians, erudite scholars, and philosophers are chewing the chew. Because for them, the politicians and the scholars and the philosophers, whatever it is that they're doing, even if they realize that the temporary enjoyments of, you know, different products or the opposite sex might not make them happy. They might have different realizations of this. But still, anything that makes you think that you're the controller or the enjoyer, that is also chewing the chute. Because it's the same thing with a different wrapper on it. Whether you think your happiness is going to be found in buying the newest brand of soap, or your happiness is going to be found in proving to everyone around you that you're the most knowledgeable in something, or that you're the best at something, or that you just want to become one with God so you don't have to suffer anymore. It's also chewing the chewed, because it's still thinking that I can be God, or I can be the enjoyer of in one way or another. So it's also chewing the chewed. The only thing that isn't chewing the chewed is serving Krishna. And yet you could be doing the same service over and over and over again for Krishna, and it's not chewing the chewed, because it's pleasing Krishna. And it's giving us more and more realization and happiness in our spiritual lives. So, Prabhupada gave the example in the purport of how people even use the Bhagavad Gita for their own selfish justifications. And how many, does anyone know the number of how many Bhagavad Gitas there were in America before Srila Prabhupada came? 600. That's what I thought. It was something like 600 different renditions, interpretations, translations of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada looked through a lot of them, but he wasn't satisfied. He didn't want to have to take the time to translate Bhagavad Gita, because he wanted to focus on the Srimad Bhagavatam. But unfortunately, none of the versions of the Bhagavad Gita previous to the one that he had written were actually giving the Bhagavad Gita as it is. They were giving some interpretation, some justification, some whatever it is, some excuse for sense gratification, excuse to become, to think that, oh, I can become God, or I can become one with God. And so Prabhupada had to, so even the people that were translating Bhagavad Gita, that was also sense gratification to some extent. It was also just chewing the chewed. And, cause it wasn't for the pleasure of God. It should just be done for the pleasure of God. It's very simple. You just do things for the pleasure of God. And, as we were discussing the other day over breakfast, it's a very important breakfast topic, the topic of wet stool and dry stool. I just wanted to get your appetite ready for, for some entries. So, material enjoyment is a lot like wet stool and dry stool. People might fight over, how can you try to enjoy your dry stool? Or how can you try to enjoy wet stool? It's so disgusting, It smells bad. But much better is dry stool. But it's all stool. And so the stool analogy is explaining that the happiness that we think is going to be found in material existence again. So one person might say, look at these beggars on the streets, engaging in illicit activities, in a box, maybe like a homeless poor person that's really dirty and doesn't, but I'm enjoying so much better because I have a 5-star hotel. But they're engaging in the same thing. And it's like people might fight over, my sense enjoyment is way better than your sense enjoyment. I have a much higher caliber. I can do it with more money, with more comforts. But it's the same sense enjoyment. Whether you have a McDonald's burger or $100 worth of a dead cow flesh. Hare Krishna. But it's the same selfish sense enjoyment. And so that's the wet stool, dry stool analogy. And until one really finds pleasure in serving the reservoir of pleasure, we will continue to look for pleasure in material things and in philosophical speculation. So we must find our pleasure in serving the source of all pleasure, in serving God, in serving Krishna. And only then will we be able to give up our desire, because the soul by nature is pleasure-seeking. What's the Sanskrit for that? Anandamaya Vashat. The soul by nature is seeking pleasure. So you shouldn't feel guilty about it, that you're looking for pleasure, because that's who you are. Because you're a tiny spark of the supreme source, the reservoir of pleasure. But the only way we can really find pleasure is by serving the source of all pleasure and pleasing the source of pleasure, and by pleasing Krishna. And it's so simple. And so we should all look for our pleasure there. And I'll give one more example while we're waiting to bring the prasadam out. How actually also chewing the chewed is a way to distract us from the pains of the material world. Because some people might even realize, a lot of people realize, most people to some extent realize that this material world has a lot of suffering in it. And so they try to distract themselves from that by looking for some pleasure in something else that's also temporary. One example that I saw, unfortunately, this weekend was my grandfather was crying all night because my grandmother passed away about a year ago, and he sees death approaching, and he sees all of his friends and his wife, they've left him, and he's feeling very lonely. Like he recognizes everything's about to be taken away from him. His health isn't so bad, but he knows that it's coming. And there is, you can't preach to your family most of the time. So it was very painful for me to not be able to really say anything. But my mother was trying to comfort him. And, my mother's comforting him. She was actually more enraged than he was. She was telling him, don't think like that. You know, it's not that bad. There are things to look forward to in life. There are pleasures to be found. So she was comforting him in finding happiness in the material world. And I couldn't even stay in the room. My mother was crying hysterically, like, no, there are things in this world that you can find pleasure in. And I was like, I can't even stand to hear this because I won't be able to keep my mouth shut about it. And so I just had to leave. But even I saw Kalakantaru requested me to speak about the Festival of Colors. So I'll do that a little bit while we're taking breakfast. But first we will say our beloved mantra.